Okay, let's look at some of the statistics about, you know, the numbers of people that die. You know, there's about 7 billion people on the planet now. And let's say if you take the average lifespan of, let's say, 80 years, it may be a little bit more or less or whatever, but it's just 80 years. That means in 80 years, 7 billion people would have died. How many are good in math here? So crunch some numbers, okay? 80 years, that means 80 into 7 billion. How many is that a year? 90 million a year. Then if you crunch that down, how many a month? A couple million. And I think it goes down to every day, 250,000. Again, give or take 5 or 10, okay? You know, so let's say every day, 250,000 people are dropping dead all over the earth. It's like, you know, bowling pins falling down. How many would that be per minute? How many would that be per second? And so why are we bewildered about death? So, you know, people are dying all the time. It's not something unusual. But, of course, most of those deaths are hidden to us because they're happening over there. Or only the big ones are reported, you know. 5,000 people got wiped out in an earthquake. 20,000 got wiped out in a tsunami. You know, 1,000 people were killed by poison gas in, you know, somewhere else. So we hear these big numbers, but we're quite unaware of the tremendous numbers of people that are dying from infinite number of causes all over the earth.
Today is 9/11.
Thank you for reminding me. That's a good idea. Today, you know, is the anniversary of 9/11. So how many people were wiped out in about 1 hour? You know, 3,000 people or so. And all those people thought they were going to get up the next morning. But because of some, you know, event, they didn't. As I mentioned before, you know, death is the only thing that is certain in life. Life is not certain. But only the time, the place, and the means of how we'll die is not known. So, you know, death is not you know, strange thing. It's common to all living beings. And, you know, as I mentioned before, you're lucky. You got up this morning. You're a survivor. You lived one more day. But we can't take that for granted. And there's a saying in the Tibetan Buddhism that, you know, tomorrow or the next life, we don't know which will come first. So we might think we're going to go somewhere tomorrow and wind up in another birth. There's a deva, or there's a ghost, or back in the womb again for 9 months cookout or warm up. Anyway, I might be making a little bit light of this, but it's actually good to have not to take so serious. You know, people are too serious about death and dying because they think it's something unusual. Look at the hospitals. You know, death is regarded as seen as something bad. So in the hospitals, if somebody dies under the doctor's knife, or if they can't resuscitate a person who has died or prevent them from dying because of some, you know, basically terminal, unoperable disease, the doctor thinks they failed. And the family might blame the doctor. Why didn't you save their life? So it's like, you know, death is seen like the enemy. To avoid it at all costs. But actually death is something that's very natural. The most natural thing in life is everything that is born will die. So even, you know, the doctor's feeling guilty because somebody died under their supervision. Of course, I'm not saying that doctors commit mistakes, of course, and people might have died due to the negligence of a doctor, but they probably would have died anyway, at least sooner or later. But nevertheless, it's the idea that death is something bad, or it's a mistake of God, God's fatal error, or whatever people might sort of imagine it. And they're all trying to blame others for the death. And, you know, there's many causes of death. The way that people die are infinite. As we mentioned, there's the reaching the natural limit of the lifespan. So now, of course, some people are living to be 100, more than 100 years old, but at a certain point, this material body has a certain limit. And when it reaches that lifespan, it will decay and expire. Or, because of some karmic result, or some karmic influence, that life might be cut off prematurely. People might die before the lifespan is reached. So you see that people are dying at all stages of life. As I mentioned, babies die in the womb before even coming out. They die 1 minute after birth, 2 minutes after birth, 5 minutes after birth, 5 hours after birth, at 1 year old, 2 years old, 3 years old, 4 years old. And at every increment up to 100, people are dying. And again, from infinite number of causes, either old age, various types of sickness, or of course, as we know, accidents, natural disasters, murders, suicide, snake bite, getting hit by a bolt of lightning. Basically, the ways that people can die are infinite. People get more creative all the time. You could read that in the newspaper, on YouTube, or whatever, you know. People are getting more and more imaginative of how death can happen. Because this body is fragile. This body is kept going because of the breath and the heartbeat, basically. Those are the two primary organs that keep the body alive. And of course, the brain. So if somebody gets shot through the brain, and the heartbeat and breathing will stop. But it's basically because of that. And these organs are susceptible to any amount of kind of, you know, corruption and, you know, damage. Because of the law of impermanence. So to view life, to cultivate the attitude that death is natural and it happens to everybody. And when you were born, again, you have a one-way ticket to death. So it shouldn't be seen as something unusual. Because you were born, everything was in the cards. Because of karma, because of the complexity of karma, and I'll be talking more about the details of that probably in this afternoon's Dhamma talk. But because of the complexity of Dhamma, of the law of karma, anything could happen to anybody at any time in any place. And so it shouldn't be, unusual that people die from so many reasons. But normally we always, saying this person died of that. This person died of that. They died of this. It's very interesting. I go down to Brazil and teach meditation Dhamma down in Brazil every year or two. So there's a Buddhist group in São Paulo, and there was one of the Buddhist devotees was a pathologist. A doctor that does autopsies. So I asked if I could go observe an autopsy, because I had never actually been to one. I wanted to see what my reaction would be about seeing somebody's skull cut in half with a hacksaw and all the organs taken out, or what the smell was. So I went and saw these autopsies, all these bodies all cut up. And I even asked, can I hold this person's brain in my hand? So after they took the brain out, I was able to hold it in my hand, and just realize that, just 6 or 8 hours before, this thing was sparking with all kinds of, electric currents and everything else. Now it's just a cold piece of flesh. But, the pathologist, the coroner, they have to write on the death certificate the cause of death. Because they have to know the cause of death. Why did they die? So I said, do you always find out the cause of death? And she said, sometimes it's difficult to know, because there are multiple things, and sometimes we can't precisely do it. And so they kind of just take a guess, write something on there that'll satisfy, the legal authorities or the family. And I said, well, if you can't find a cause of death or, some specific, you write birth. So birth is the cause of death. That's the real cause of death, is birth. So we shouldn't be so surprised that when we were born, because of, again, the complexity of karma, everything was in the cards. We were lucky you didn't die in a womb. Or you didn't die when you were 1 year old, 2 years old, or, you lived to be the age you are. Of course, that's due to some karmic influences and so on, but nevertheless, it could have been possible. And even in one family, every single person is unique. That even in one family who has the same genes of their mother or father, one of the child might have good health, the other one might be sickly, or have some other sorts of developmental problems and so on. But anyway, we'll We'll talk more about that later. But the main thing in the contemplation is to understand that death is something that is common to all living beings, and it shouldn't be seen as something unnatural or something bad, because that's the nature of impermanence. So, you know, this is the proper attitude. So when you get a notice that you have some terminal illness, even though, you know, we may not, like it, the fact that, well, that was always in the cards. Or one of your loved ones get something, or was murdered, or any number of other kind of catastrophes. That's the way it is. And it happens to hundreds and thousands of people all over the world, so it's not anything unusual. But we try to hide it. That's why when people die in a hospital, you know, after 1 or 2 hours, they take the body out. You know, it's a business death. So they take the body out so they can clean the room for the next person. A lot of people don't want to look at the bodies. So they take them to the morgue. They put them in a tuxedo. And they, you know, make it all look like a doll laying in the box. So it looks all nice. Because people don't want to see that, the gore. They want to see their loved one with worms crawling in and out of their eyeballs. Or in some other way, all corrupted. And so, you know, death is kind of hidden. And even in, you know, these countries, when people grow old and sick, you know, a lot of times the family, you know, doesn't want to deal with it personally, or, you know, they put them in a convalescent home. And just visit them once in a while. I'm not, you know, that may be good, where they can get care, but nevertheless, the idea is that some people don't want to have that reminder constantly of the pain and suffering of decay, old age and decay, which is reminding you of yourself, and the fear of what you yourself may go through later on. So that the death is kind of hidden. We hear it happens on the other side of the world. You know, we're reading our newspaper in the morning, we're checking the internet news, right? And you hear all these people dying all over the world in different causes. But it's like out there. And so we kind of just, yeah, that's too bad, okay. Yeah. Give me my coffee or give me a whiskey. You know, go about your business. Lead your life as though death was not going to come to you by creating all kinds of attachments, getting caught up in all kinds of karmic bindings that affect the mind, negligent to the fact of that you know, we could die at any time. And there's interesting little analogy that the Buddha gave about the four thoroughbred horses and the attitude that people have toward the death. So a farmer had four horses, work horses, in a barn. They were down the hill from his house. So he had a house up on a little hill, and he used to go down to the barn every morning to get the horses to plow the fields. So just the fact that the farmer comes out of his screen door in the morning, and you know, that's the screen door kind of, you know, slam shut, going boom. Then, you know, it's heard down the hill, and when a horse hears that, he jumps up and says, "Oh, my master is coming today. Let me prepare for the work." And the other three keep sleeping. And then the farmer walks down the hill and opens the creaky wooden door of the barn. And the second horse only then jumps up. "Oh, my master is here. Let me prepare for today's work." And the other two keep sleeping. Then the farmer takes the wooden goad off the central pillar of the barn, you know, where the chains and the goads are kept. I don't know if you know about farms, but takes that off and rattles the chains. Then the third horse jumps up. Oh, my master's here. Let me do today's work. Get ready for today's work. The fourth one keeps sleeping. And only when the farmer jabs the goad into the horse's ribs, only then he jumps up. Oh, the master's here. So that's the way, you know, people are in regard to their unmindfulness about the nature of decay and death and the way that they lead their life. So some people hear that there was a death on the other side of the world. Oh, it was too bad. Okay, but you know, they just ignore it. Maybe they send a donation, you know, $20 or something. But then they it doesn't make them alter their life any bit. Doesn't make them give up their alcohol or drugs or any other negative habits that could cause them difficulty later. And then some serial killer is, you know, in a city, and people start, serial killer, okay, you know, put security on their bars, but still they kind of just go ahead and live in their life normally. And then one of their kinfolk gets a notice from the doctor, terminal disease, 6 months to live. Oh, then it's coming to come closer. I have those genes too, I wonder. Probably not. And you feel sad, but still it may not, it's not still close enough to home. And only when you yourself get a close shave, maybe you get mugged at night, or worse, or you get your own notice about a terminal disease, and then only then you might start thinking, could happen or going to happen, and take things more seriously in terms of what you want to do with your life, understanding how fragile life is and what's really the most important to it. Is it just amassing sensual pleasures, or is it wanting to fortify our mind against, you know, greed, hatred, delusion, and fear, anxiety, and worry, or guilt, worry, remorse, and fear? Because many people die with guilt, worry, remorse, and fear that they didn't do what they should have done, and didn't do what they should have done, and did what they shouldn't have done. And that will plague the mind at the time of death. So anyway, so these are the kind of attitudes. You know, some people think that contemplating death is kind of morbid, you know, because they have the wrong attitude toward it. So it has to be, it should be seen as something very natural. Because, you know, everything in life, even the, you know, all these buildings, everything that was made by the conditioned mind will perish and dissolve, even something as big as concrete buildings. So what about this, you know, fragile meat bone body? And there was a TV show on some years ago. It was very interesting. It was about how the world kind of ended. So it showed that all of a sudden, first part of the movie was, you know, all the cars were stopped on the freeway, and all the humans somehow just disappeared. And the cars were still running on the freeway, factories were still burning things. And it showed one or 2 days later, gasoline had run out of all the cars, engines, they stopped. You know, factories were slowing down, pets were getting nervous in the house about no food. It kept on going, you know, week after week, month after week, month. The animals were going frantic. They escaped their houses to go off food. They started killing, you know, everybody. It was like chaos. And it goes on for 1,000 years, 10,000 years, 100,000 years. I forget the exact number, but, you know, a city like New York City, all these skyscrapers, Statue of Liberty, you know, within 20 or 50,000 years, nothing left, covered with ice, not one trace of any type of man-made things left. And that's because of impermanence. So therefore, I mean, I'm just saying all this so that, you know, we contemplate this, so when things happen to us, we won't be caught surprised. Why me? Why did this happen to me? Why not you? Are you somehow better that it shouldn't happen to you? Because these happen to hundreds and thousands and millions of people every day. You want to happen to somebody else, not you? Again, don't take me wrong and think I'm very pessimistic, but this is a realistic attitude. So that when things happen, we can accept it, of course. We have to accept what is there. As I mentioned last night, if something is within our means to help to preserve the life and prolong it a bit, especially for practicing the Dhamma, then we should do that. But at a certain point, you won't be able to. And you know, old age is, as I mentioned before, people try to hide it. So when you turn 40 and you see the first gray hair on the head, what do? Run to the pharmacy, get some hair color. Hide that. When other problems arise, you know, cosmetic surgery, or all these ways to kind of hide the process of old age and death as if it was something bad again. So this is kind of ingrained in the psyche. But you can only have so many facelifts and fix things only for so long. So people are in denial about death, especially, you know, kind of younger types, thinking it's not going to happen, or hiding the process. So in the contemplation in the Maranasati, we try to, you know, rip away all these type of maskings of the nature of life, and not see it as something bad, but seeing it as this, you know, this is the nature of life. So, I've in the library, I put out a couple copies of this our chanting book. And in this, on certain pages, there's in the Satipatthana Sutta, there's the section on contemplating the body. It has the 32 body part contemplation, in which, you know, when you're sitting and meditating, it's kind of like a self-guided tour, or, you know, using a little bit of imagination. You contemplate all the different parts of the body and how they're impermanent. And what kind of suffering give rise to that? Although in that 32 body part is not mentioned necessarily the head hairs, but the, you know, there's the hairs of the head, the hairs of the body, skin, teeth, nails, and then all the internal organs, the skeleton, heart, lungs, liver, spleen, kidneys. And any one of those gets damaged or defective by whatever means, you know, it throws the whole, you know, system into kind of chaos, you know, and causes problems and pains. So every single tiny part of the body is subject to decay and alteration. And how much suffering does it cause? How much, you know, in order to try to look beautiful, people have to spend their life savings on, you know, perfect teeth, or, you know, perfect facelift, or so many other sort of things, because they think they have to keep up some kind of image. That's how the kind of the society is kind of really, you know, because they don't understand Dhamma, they've glamorized beauty and health, and so make other people feel guilty if they don't have that. And so they want to catch up, or even just to get a job, if you don't, you know, look like the perfect Barbie doll, then it may be hard to, you know, get a job even, or whatever other types of, you know, things. So, you know, there's so much of this kind of, you know, fear of and denial of the old age and death and impermanence and people trying to hide it. But it can only go so far, and then you can't hide it. And then the world comes falling down on top of the head. And then it's even more painful. So all of these things are part of the contemplation of the body. So this morning, we're going to, you know, in the first part of the meditation, I'm going to lead you through the traditional verses of the Maranasati. So it's a list of about 20 four-line verses about just the nature of death and dying that you can kind of just ponder. Because there's two kinds of meditation, basically. One kind is just developing silent sort of concentration and awareness, you know, observing things come and go. But there's another reflective contemplation or discursive contemplation, which you actually think about the topic. So Maranasati is one of those. We're actually kind of thinking about you know, these different aspects of death, and of course there's other topics as well. Metta is one of those topics. So, and then, you know, later on, you know, when you, if you want to read those, that the Maranasati also will be, it's in this book. There's lots of good contemplations in this Bhavana Society chanting book. I think there's even copies for people to, if they can have one, right? Copies out there on the bookshelf. But there's a few copies in the library that you can just read while you're there in the library. And then you can do this yourself. And apart from the 32 body part contemplation, then there's these 9 cemetery contemplations that somebody asked me earlier about, that you can read about the stages of the decomposition of the body after death. So 9 stages. And you can read that, and if you want to do that yourself, then you know, these are things that you kind of memorize the outline of it, then you sit down and you just try to imagine it or contemplate these things. And even that kind of thinking meditation has very much power. And it, you know, leads to the deeper, the ability to let go and to detach from the clinging and the wrong view about the life. So anyway, why don't you now stand up for a couple minutes just to relieve any buildup of discomfort in your legs. Few deep, slow breaths, just to oxygenate the blood. Just bring the mind into the body.